From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The buzz at the state capitol is starting to wind down. Lawmakers go on summer recess next week. And in terms of money, a new state budget was passed by the legislature and signed into law by Governor Newsom, which included a great deal of negotiating down to the 11th hour. The budget closes a $12 billion shortfall and also comes with some big changes to housing development. Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald joins us with a 101 on the reserves that the state used to help close that shortfall, and she'll dive into the big change to a decades-long environmental law called CEQA, which hopes to curb California's housing crisis. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so first things first, remind us about California's budget reserves. What are they? What do they do?
Yeah, well, the way that helps me think about it is California's, you know, it's kind of like our own online banking system, right? You maybe log in to whatever it is online, your online portal, and first you see your checking account. And in California, that's the general fund, which is, it's not part of the state's reserves. It's where the money is for things that the state needs to spend on each year. Maybe that's ongoing funding for social programs, safety net programs, or money to fund the implementation of legislation that lawmakers pass every year. And then you have the budget stabilization account, and people really don't call it that. They call it the state's rainy day fund. And this is like the state's main savings account. And it's established in the state constitution, and there are regular deposits that are required each year. And it also has limits on how and how much can be withdrawn at any given time. The state also has another fund called the Special Fund for Economic Uncertainty. And this is another account where California can save money to cushion potential budget shortfalls, but it doesn't have the same restrictions on it as the Rainy Day Fund. So there's some flexibility there when it comes to lawmakers putting money in or even taking money out. And then there are a few other reserve funds, one for public schools. There's another one for social program spending. But these ones that I described are the main ones that are relevant for this year's budget deal. Oh,
okay. So there's just an array of different piggy banks that the state can pull from during tough financial times.
Exactly.
If the general fund isn't enough. Historically, do these reserves, especially the ones that we're going to be focusing on today, do they work as intended?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, these reserves are really to make sure that the state is prepared for fluctuations in revenue that inevitably happen every couple of years. Some years, the state might bring in more than it spends on key programs, and other years, it'll be short, and lawmakers have, you know, they're faced with a choice, either cut spending in programs or raise taxes. And that was the situation they were in this year. So these reserves are there for the state to use to smooth out those swings in revenue and spending. And there is some debate about whether state reserves work the best way that they can. There's an argument that the deposit cap for reserves should be raised so that the state can actually save more money in the long run.
Oh, okay. When it comes to this year's budget and the shortfall that we talked at length about, and you joined us a lot on Insight about it, how big of a deal was it?
Yeah, well, lawmakers passed a $321 billion spending plan. That it's very high, even for California history. And the biggest hurdle they faced is filling what Governor Gavin Newsom said was a $12 billion budget deficit. The budget that Newsom and lawmakers ultimately agreed to pulls around $13 billion from state reserves to get to a balanced budget. So to the naked eye, maybe you're looking at that math and it looks like they successfully filled the hole and that the state isn't facing a shortfall anymore. But it's actually a little more complicated than that.
Yeah, because there were also cuts that were made as well. So why is that?
Exactly. So, you know, and this is something I had to figure out for myself, too, because, you know, I'm not a math person. But if you look at the numbers, you think it, you know, successfully fills the hole. But what I learned is that, you know, there's $7 billion of those $13 billion in reserves that we're relying on this year. That was actually agreed to as part of a 2-year budget deal passed last summer. So lawmakers were already projecting a deficit. So they essentially worked ahead and said, we're going to plan on taking this much out to balance the budget for next year. And that time is now. So in January, taking this reserve money into account, the budget was roughly balanced with the $7 billion that we were already planning on taking out. And I asked Scott Graves with the California Budget and Policy Center about this, and this is how he explained it.
Back in January, the governor said, hey, with that $7 billion factored in, our budget is roughly balanced. Then when he came back in May and looked at the revenue picture and other factors, he said, oh no, our budget is no longer roughly balanced. In fact, my Department of Finance is projecting a budget deficit for the 25-26 fiscal year that we're gonna have to close, even taking into account the $7 billion that we already said we were gonna withdraw from our rainy day fund a year ago.
So Graves mentioned some factors there, and they include the devastating fires in Los Angeles that caused record-breaking damage, and the stock market swings after President Donald Trump's tariff policies. That also impacted state revenues. So we're facing a much bigger deficit now, and that $7 billion that was agreed to last year, it doesn't address it at all.
Yeah, because it ended up being $12 billion of a shortfall for the state budget for this upcoming fiscal year. So what reserves were actually used to help close this budget shortfall?
Yeah, the $7 billion we talked about, that's coming out of the Rainy Day Fund, the state's primary savings account. And then there's about $6.5 billion that's coming out of the state's other cash reserves. There's, you know, kind of a smattering there.
How much of a chunk is this?
So yeah, I looked into this because I was curious. If we take out $7 billion from the state's rainy day fund, that leaves just about over $11 billion in the state savings account. So
okay,
not quite half, but maybe about 40%.
So using your analogy of us having a checking account and a savings account, is it as simple as X amount is taken out from the piggy bank, the savings account, or is it more complicated than that?
It's a little more complicated because, like you said, you know, a few minutes ago, there's lots of different piggy banks, you know, that the state is relying on. And I mean, when we say piggy bank, I feel like most people are talking about this in the context of the state's rainy day fund, which is that primary savings account. But there are other cash reserves that lawmakers can draw from more freely. You know, this budget sets aside actually $4.5 billion to put into the state's special fund for economic uncertainty. It's kind of a mouthful, but it's one of the other funds that lawmakers can pull money out of more freely. And so that looks like it's an expense for the state, but it's because the state is actually taking this money and putting it aside for future uncertainty. So some actually count this $4.5 billion as part of the deficit, but it's really because the state's setting it aside not to spend it.
Okay, so $7 billion in reserves was already committed from last summer. An additional $6 billion was pulled. The deficit was ultimately $12 billion, but the budget also included spending cuts. How crucial were these reserves to balancing the budget?
Yeah, I mean, it was a year of budget negotiations that were really marked by a series of difficult choices for lawmakers. They kind of made that known at every turn in the budget process this year. So I think it's fair to say that it was in, like, these reserves were a really important factor that helped smooth out budget shortfalls. And ultimately, you know, that's what our reserves are there for. But cuts were also a big part of helping lawmakers get to this point where they agreed to something that was passable and workable for the state.
Was $13 billion in reserves, did that come as a surprise to you since you follow this so closely?
Last year's two-year budget deal was unusual. That doesn't usually happen. Usually they do each year's budget year by year. It's definitely caused some confusion this year when it comes to understanding the budget and how, you know, how we're balancing it, because we need to be reminded that relying on these reserves was already a part of the plan from the beginning. So it's not getting us to where we need to be given everything that's happened in the last 6 months. And of course, pulling from reserves is also, like, it's always a big point of debate around budget season. A lot of lawmakers, particularly Republicans, have criticized the amounts of reserves that this budget relies on in order to be balanced. And they say it's just another example of California overspending.
Looking ahead, how is the state financially positioned for future budget years?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this budget was really a process of difficult choices, it seems like. There are cuts, pulling from reserves, and then also grappling with uncertainties from the fires and federal cuts. you know, the federal budget bill hadn't been passed at this point. So experts say these challenges are likely to stay for a few years. We might be okay this year, but spending is likely to outgrow our reserves. So it's also likely the legislature will have a special session this fall where they'll revisit the budget, maybe make some changes depending on what happens at the federal level.
You're listening to Insight here at Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Cap Radio state politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald about the state budget recently passed by lawmakers and signed by Governor Newsom. Okay, so let's dive into one of the big changes that was wrapped into this budget. It involves CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. Remind us of the role that this law has played in the 50 plus years it's been around.
Yeah, no, 50 years, like you said, CEQA was first passed back in 1970. So it's long been a part of the building and development process in California. And it essentially requires a series of environmental reviews and impact analyses, you know, air, traffic, noise, pollution. It takes, you know, it requires studying all of these things for developments ranging from small housing complexes to big sports stadiums.
Why has it been so controversial over the decades?
Well, it's, you know, it's known to take a long time to complete the review process required under CEQA. And, you know, since I've been covering the legislature, you see sometimes lawmakers have sought CEQA exemptions for big development projects in their districts so that they can kind of fast track some of these things that they know that their communities need. So a lot of people say it's become a big roadblock to building sorely needed housing in California that some interest groups they've been able to weaponize it to stop projects that they don't like. And it results in litigation that can last for years sometimes.
Yeah. And that has dollar signs attached to it. So what's the backstory behind what unfolded with CEQA in this year's budget negotiations?
There were two bills introduced this year that proposed significant changes to CEQA with the goal of making it easier to build more housing in urban and dense areas. So, you know, a lot of city areas. They were authored by two Democrats from the Bay Area, Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco and Assemblymember Buffy Wicks of Oakland. They're reliably two of the most pro-housing members in the legislature. And when Newsom presented his May revise, he said, these are good ideas. Let's incorporate them into the budget rather than these two bills that might not pass until August or September when the session wraps up. So they got tucked into the budget that way.
Tucked into the budget. So what change did lawmakers and Newsom agree upon?
Yeah. So the policy that they agreed upon, it basically is going to make it so that infill development projects really aren't subject to CEQA anymore. And infill development refers to building and utilizing spaces in dense urban areas to kind of maximize usage. And
so like an apartment complex?
Yeah, apartment complex. Yeah, things that are primarily like in areas where housing is it's all over the state. But when you think about our really dense city areas, I think that's where the struggle is the greatest. And I think that's also where it's the hardest to build housing. And so this is actually how Newsom described the bills when he signed them after they passed the Assembly and Senate.
The most consequential housing reforms that we've seen in modern history in the state of California.
Okay, and I'm sure that everyone wasn't entirely on board with this consequential housing reform that the governor just laid out. So what were the main arguments from the opposition?
Yeah, unsurprisingly, a lot of environmental groups opposed these changes and said it was a dangerous rollback of an important environmental law that's been on the books in California for decades. I spoke with Frances Tinney, a CEQA attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity.
There's no reason that CEQA has to be gutted to enable affordable housing. And in fact, there are a lot of CEQA exemptions already around infill housing and affordable housing.
Okay, so you have environmental groups who understandably, you know, from their perspective, not on board with this change to CEQA. Were there actually Democrats within the supermajority at the state legislature who also were not on board? Did anyone vote against this housing bill?
Yeah, definitely. Some Democrats were definitely concerned about this bill. And you know, it's an interesting tension point because housing and the environment are both issues that Democrats hold up as major parts of their platform and values as a party here in California. And in this case, these two policy areas were really at odds with each other. And, you know, this wasn't just this year. We've seen this play out in years past in the Capitol. There were a few Democrats that abstained from the bill. One of them I know from Santa Barbara voted no. And like I said, it's not really unheard of when you look back at bills that seek to bypass CEQA for certain projects. There have been some Democrats who voted no while others supported.
So I'm also curious about Republican state lawmakers. I would think less regulation might be a good thing, especially when it comes to building and development. Where do they stand on this change to CEQA?
Yeah, I think Republicans agree with a lot of the Democrats that also supported this bill that CEQA needs to be streamlined. But we actually saw some a lot of Republicans criticize the fact that Newsom tied the passage of this policy to the entire state budget. Some made it clear they thought Newsom was strong arming the legislature on this, which I don't think was received well in every case. But Republicans weren't the only ones who didn't like how the legislative process played out for this. These were the last bills that lawmakers and Newsom agreed to. Like you said, there were some 11th hour negotiations, and they weren't even in print when lawmakers were being asked to hear them in committees. And that didn't sit well with Republicans, but just legislators in general.
All right. Well, ultimately, it was wrapped into the budget and it was passed and signed into law. So when does it take effect?
Yeah, because they do it through the budget, they take effect immediately. So we'll see how it plays out.
So given that this was a formative change to a more than 50-year-old law, an environmental law, are there any upcoming discussions or talks about CEQA-related changes at the legislature in the future? Or is this it?
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as CEQA exists, there's going to be a legislative conversation to be had about how it's working. And, you know, part of the legislature's job is to see how policies they pass end up playing out in real life. And so I'm sure this is going to be a future discussion as well.
Thank you so much for a breakdown, Laura.
Yeah, thanks, Vicky.
That is Cap Radio state politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald discussing the state budget that was recently signed into law, which pulls $13 billion from reserves and also comes with a big change for CEQA and housing development. Up next, making menopause treatment more affordable. More than half of the population will go through it in their lifetime, but a lack of research has led to barriers for relief. We'll learn about state legislation that might make it more accessible. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.